Samar.
Mom.
I'll come with you.
Hi, this is Jasmine Bayomi, and you just met our journalist and filmmaker Hyojin Park.
Is this gonna be fun or not fun?
Depends if your definition of fun is getting shot at. It's going to be fun, yeah.
Okay, well, that's fair.
A few months ago, Hyojin was in the West Bank in Palestine, filming a Palestinian mother and discovering that moms in this country have very different worries than moms elsewhere. Hey, Hyojin, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me where exactly you were in the West Bank and what were you doing there?
I went to this small village near Ramallah named Nabi Saleh, and I met this incredible woman, Manal. And she, to be honest, from the outside, she looks like any other Palestinian mother you would meet. You know, she's very doting and she's very friendly. She always has this big smile on her face. She has 4 children, 3 sons and 1 daughter.
My resistance is about life, about hope, about dreams, about their beautiful future. It's not about death. So I keep resisting, but in the same time, I keep caring about myself, caring about my family.
So how is being a mom in Palestine different from being a mom elsewhere, let's say in the UK and or, I mean, you're Korean. So like, how is it different from being a mom in Korea?
Yeah, I think you're constantly under the threat of your children, you know, getting into trouble, even if they are on their best behavior. So you can't just teach your children to be on their best behavior. You have to also teach your children to be on the defensive and to figure out what to do in certain situations, which, I mean, I never grew up having to know, like, what to do if you're suddenly surrounded by, like, tear gas or if, or if you're being, you know, if there are rubber bullets fired in your direction, like, what do you do? Or if a soldier stops you at a checkpoint and tries to detain you. Like, when I was 15, I did not have to know any of these things. And I really think that that's a blessing.
Being a Palestinian mother means that you have to be a superwoman, to be a hero, a model, unbreakable person, which is impossible, but by the end, being a human being. I think that the most difficult thing, 3 things in the world. First, to be a Palestinian, living under occupation, to be a woman, Palestinian, and third, to be activist. Because each one of these 3 things having its own risk and its own danger.
There must be several women in that area and in that village, like you just said. What is it that you saw in Manal? Like, why did you seek her out?
So I didn't exactly seek out Manal. When I first went there, I went there with this idea that I wanted to interview these children who were in the village, and they're very much a public figure. But when I got there and stayed with this family for 2 whole days, I realized what I should really delve into is what it's like to be a mother of these children in these settings and what kind of circumstance would put you in this kind of weird social dynamic.
So there are all these protests in this village, Nabi Saleh, and that women participate. And that happens every Friday?
Every Friday. I mean, they took a short break for a little bit, but yes, they consistently happen on Fridays. They started protesting in 2010, and they basically put themselves on the map. Before 2010, if you searched Nabi Saleh on Google, then you would have found something about a prophet, Saleh. And now, when you search Nabi Saleh on Google, the first thing, like hundreds of results, it would be about this specific village of Nabi Saleh. And that's because they started protesting every single Friday, and that really put them on the map. And Manal's entire family is actually very much a core part of this. Mm-hmm. And the reason why the protests started in the first place mm-hmm. is because when you go to Nabi Saleh, you'll notice that right across the village, you can see a big settlement. called Halamish.
Yeah, well, let's pull it up on a map. Mm-hmm. Do you happen to have it?
Shoo. If this is Nabi Saleh,
yeah,
right here around, like, you could probably walk there in 15 minutes.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Halamish.
So that's like, what, a kilometer and a half to or something?
Probably around that far. And when I went to the village, these kids took me to the top of the hill. And we all walked there. And he pointed right at this huge, identical houses, sprawling hill. And when the settlers in Halamish took over their springs in 2010, that's when these protests really started.
Wait, they took over the springs of the people in Nabi Saleh?
Yes.
Oh.
So the water source, basically. Yeah. And now the protests have taken on a bigger meaning than just these springs, because the settlement keeps getting bigger and bigger and encroaching more and more on this land that basically the Tamimis own. So this is no longer just about a spring. So the protests are mostly contained within the village now. Every Friday, now the soldiers have begun to kind of expect them. So they will be ready for these protests. There's this big gas station at the very entrance of the village, and one road that leads in and out of the village. And basically, they will get ready on top of the hill near Manal's house, and they will all just start chanting and walk down this road. The soldiers will be waiting there. So, I mean, the villagers can't go any farther than that. So there will be this standoff, villagers on one side and then the soldiers on the other. And that's pretty much it for most of the time.
Well, does it stay peaceful?
Well, that's the thing. The Tamimis, their main objective is peaceful protest. It's non-violent protest. And the children or the young people there do throw stones. And I think that's what a lot of international audience talks about when these stories come out. Like, but these protests are not peaceful. They're throwing stones. But when you're in the midst of it all, I think it's very, very obvious that the power dynamics is not as clear-cut as this, and one side obviously has more power than the other. And, I mean, Manal has gotten arrested, and she has also gotten shot twice.
Wow.
Once by a live bullet and one by a rubber bullet.
The first time I was arrested at the beginning of our protest, when they shot a gas canister inside the house, we tried to evacuate children. So they arrested me. My children were watching from the windows, and they saw the way, it was very humiliated, the way they arrested me. They tried to take our scarves. They tried to take off my clothes. They were beating me up all the time. So it was very difficult. The second time, they came 2 a.m, and they put me in this room, and they began to beat me up. So Samir and Rand and others, they were sitting here and hearing me screaming and shouting. There were 5 soldiers beating me up, so it was impossible just to keep silent.
Sometimes the soldiers conduct night raids in this village. They send soldiers in the middle of the night at like 2 a.m. and makes the children all get up and stand outside, and they take pictures of them and like take pictures of their IDs and then just leave. And I mean, there's not only that, but there was this one instance when the soldier came into the house during the day in order to find somebody, to arrest somebody, and they were searching the house, and Manal stands up to them, and this nice and gentle lady, usually, she turns into this some lion, like trying to protect her house, you know.
You can see that there is no children.
Your children throwing stones.
Nobody throwing stones. Even if they throw stones, this is their right.
Who told you that they are my children?
This is their right. You're invading their village. You are killing them. You are terrorists. Go out. Go out of my house!
It's really impressive. There's this like really She's quite short, right?
Yeah.
Like quite a short lady with a hijab, and she is furious. And so she's like yelling at those soldiers who are like, what, half a meter taller than her?
And in like these full face masks and, you know, bulletproof jackets and like huge gun on their backs.
So in the film, I don't really see how the situation ends. How does it end?
Well, her and her husband yell at them and resist until the soldiers finally leave. But coming back to why she sends her kids out there, she explained to me that as a Palestinian mom raising children under occupation, she really doesn't have much of a choice.
It's not easy for me as a mother to take my children to a protest or to participate in the resistance, because, you know, motherhood is about caring, about making life secure, about keeping children away of danger, which is something is not available for us as Palestinian. But in the same time, I don't want for my children to be weak. I don't want them to be afraid, because being afraid under occupation, you will lose life.
You know, the comments that'll come in response to that, like, we've all seen this. Basically, people saying she's deliberately putting her kids in harm's way and she's teaching them to be violent. You see those types of comments online all the time. And you see people arguing that this in itself is reason enough for the Israeli army to respond with violence.
Well, first of all, she doesn't actually want her children to be violent. She very much advocates that they practice nonviolent resistance, if possible. But I think she also knows how much anger her children feel. And she would much rather those angers be somehow satisfied or relieved rather than it become a trauma or a burden to her children.
So people who criticizing us that you are putting your children in danger, it's not us who putting our children in danger. It's the occupation. It's the Israeli forces. It's the soldier who come. These people who put our children in danger. Nobody want to risk his child life. But if you are in a critical situation, you have to teach your child how to deal with this.
When the children are throwing stones at soldiers, they know that they're actually resisting against something much bigger. The soldiers just are a simple representation of what occupation looks like. But they would much rather actually let the children express the resistance in a more productive way. Her son, Hamada, he wants to be a first aid medic. So they encouraged him to be in the protests to be a medic or a first aid responder rather than, you know, throwing stones.
There must be so much trauma there that there must be anger issues as well with those kids. Like, how does Manal go about and control that?
One of the side effects of this protest or this constant surrounded by occupation that the children face has been the fact that they're much actually harder to control within the house, because these children are taking an active role in the resistance. So they have grown up, I think, a little bit too fast.
The worst result is that some of the children, they lost control. For example, one of the children, he was in the school and his teacher told him to do something, so he doesn't want to do. So he went, he brought a tear gas canister. He find after the soldier shot and it didn't explode. So he threw it at the school. So some of the children, they totally lose control on themselves. And you feel at this moment how much the children are traumatized and they are broken from inside. As a mother or as a parent, we try to control this. So it's not easy. Sometimes you don't know what you have to do. You don't know how to control this anger.
So wait, Manal herself, you said she's been shot twice and she's been injured. Does she actually still go out and protest along with her kids and her husband?
Manal used to be a very much active participant of the protests from the very beginning, but nowadays she tries not to participate as much. And one of the reason is because of her physical injury. But another reason is because her daughter, Rand, was really, really, really traumatized when she saw her mother being beaten up by soldiers. So now she's actually really scared that if she participates in the protest, someone will get hurt, someone she cares about. But she does keep herself very busy while everyone is in protest. She hosts a lot of the activists who come to help the protest. So she cooks. She cooks these huge dinners for us.
This is another way of nonviolent resistance. To keep this you healthy.
I remember she, when I was filming her in her kitchen while she was making dinner, she asked me in a very worried tone if I was vegetarian, because she told me she used to have these European activists who were actually vegan and it was very hard for her to cook for them. She manages the Twitter account and she actually gives a lot of interviews. When I was there, there was one other journalist from a French newspaper there to talk to her, and, you know, she was talking to him.
With all this going on, kids in the field, husband in the field, and that's happening weekly, those kids, like, having those confrontations pretty much all the time, or fearing confrontations with the Israeli soldiers. How often does home banter turn into teaching moments about fear or anger, and what does that look like?
I think there is almost no real difference between home banters and teaching moments, because they never really need to be taught about occupation. But what she does talk to her children about is really important safety first aid in case something happens, or what to do when they are detained by soldiers, like what kind of rights do they have? You know, the fact that they have a right to a phone call, or like the lawyer, like, I think those are very interesting and important things to talk about, especially because she has three sons. And her sons, two of her sons who are now of an adult age, have been arrested and detained before. So they need to understand what's going to happen in those situations.
How does Manal find the strength to carry on? And also, why does she keep going on despite all this?
I think for her, stopping is not an option. I mean, because this is not the life she chose. I think if she could choose, if she could have any kind of decision-making power in what her life looks like, I don't think she would be choosing to, you know, having to protest because their land is being taken away, or having soldiers come into their houses at night. You know, I don't think this is any of her choice. The occupation was not her choice. And it's not something that she can live with either. So she needs to be fighting this constantly. She wants to give her children that piece of, you know, normal children's lives too. So they go on vacations, they go to the beach, and they enjoy these times where they're like, oh, this is what it feels like to not constantly be worried about what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes. But at the same time, when they come back to their home, and this is their home, she's going to have to start thinking about this again, you know? So it's either that she becomes compliant and becomes dismissive, or becomes hopeless in the face of what's going on, or she can stand up and fight. And she would much rather her children stand up and fight.
But this is our life. It's a risky one. But it's about to control it, to find for beauty in the middle of distraction, to find hope in the middle of stress and depression, to find happiness in the middle of the chaos we are living. And I'm trying to do this and teaching my children also to do it.
That's it from The Debrief this week. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And A Palestinian Supermom Story is part of our AJ Short series. They're short documentaries about ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances. Feel free to watch our shorts on aljazeera.com/shorts. See you next week. Bye.